Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Welcome, everyone, to Manufacturing Talk Radio. We're glad to have you back with us this Tuesday. My name is Tim Grady. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Weiss. Lou's company, All Metals and Forge Group, is the sponsor of Manufacturing Talk Radio. Lou, how are you today?
Terrific, terrific. Looking forward to the show today. We've got a couple of interesting people. I would like to talk about what we did last week. We had a couple of interesting folks on at Orr from Strategas. They are a economic forecast company. He's regular on our show. It's a regular spot in our news. And a very knowledgeable gentleman from a basis. Today's big news, and usually Tuesday is not a great news day. The SAM comes out with their PMI number. The fourth number has fallen before 50, is now 48.6, I believe it is. And we do have Brad Beckham on later in the show, and he will be discussing the situation as it exists.
I'd like to welcome our guests to the show today. We're going to be talking about Section 179, which is a tax credit, and I will have the experts in that area speak to it. We have Vince Paolucci, who is a partner with Weiser Mazars, on the show with us. Vince, welcome to the show.
Hello, Tim. How are you? Thanks for having us.
Good. We're excited to have you on the show today. We also have Gianluca Carabs, who's senior tax associate with Weiser Mazars, on the show. And I'll let each of these gentlemen share with our audience what they do in their practice. But I would like, Vince, to give us an overview of Weiser Mazars and what the firm does, what you folks do, and then we can jump into Section 179.
Sure. Thank you, Tim. Once again, my name is Vince Paolucci. I'm a CPA at the firm, a tax partner, heading up the Long Island office tax operations. Weiser Mazars is a regional, right now, and almost national accounting firm consisting of about 800 individuals with offices in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Long Island, Chicago, Florida, and California, and also with an international reach associated with the Mazars Group over in France with offices in about 72 countries. We're a full-service firm specializing in various types of businesses and markets, a lot of owner-managed businesses. I particularly are I'm in the manufacturing and distribution market segment of the firm, which is probably the largest percentage of our revenue firm-wide in that group. So we service a fair amount of clients in manufacturing distribution, hence I guess the reason why I've been asked to speak on this topic to this group. And, you know, we do a lot of different things, international, state, and local, and so on and so forth. Pretty well-diverse firm, and it's been around for a fair number of years.
Well, it certainly sounds like an excellent firm, and we are very excited to talk about this Section 179, particularly as it relates to manufacturing, because that's one of your largest segments in the firm. Vince, why don't you give us an idea for our listeners what Section 179 is and what's kind of been happening to it over 2014, 2015?
Sure. I'd love to do that. For the listeners, 179 is a deduction. I just want to be clear that it's not a credit. It's a tax deduction. It's an expense election that you can make with a tax return without having to make an actual election, to expense a certain amount of the assets that you've acquired, fixed assets, your manufacturing equipment, furniture, fixtures, and so forth. Right, the limits were rather large last year, that you could expense up to $500,000 of acquired assets and take that as a upfront deduction off your taxable income. If your total investment didn't exceed more than $2 million, there is some phase out there. But the issue with 179 right now is after 2014, starting in 15, the limits were reduced to $25,000 again, which was part of the changes in some of the Tax Act. Last year, it was extended in December back to $500,000 as well, kind of at the last minute. We're expecting, hopefully, Congress does the same this year and reenacts and the $500,000 deduction again. Unfortunately, it might be too late for some companies to make investments, you know, which we get into later and some observations. But the 179 is an item that allows you to accelerate depreciation on assets and get you some good upfront tax deductions and some good savings in the beginning.
And there's another aspect that we talked about briefly prior to the show, Vince, and that was bonus. Is that correct?
Sure, Tim. Yeah, we spoke about bonus. I like to speak about bonus and 179 and depreciation all in one package, and Luca is going to monetize it a little bit in a moment for you. But 179 is a expense election that could be made up to limits. Bonus depreciation was another vehicle in which manufacturers could write off up to 50% of their asset acquisitions in the first year as well. In addition to the 179 deduction, if the asset acquisitions were new. And then on top of that, then you would have your regular depreciation. So, you know, a taxpayer really in dire need of tax deductions, accelerated tax deductions, when all the limits are raised and are there, can take advantage of the three items, bonus, 179, and depreciation. And I was going to have just Luca quickly just run through a quick analysis just to give you an idea of what that means. Luca, why don't you just share that little example if you can?
Sure. It's so if the tax extenders do go through, and we're assuming a purchase of $1.1 million of equipment for a manufacturing entity, if the extensions go through and Congress decides to keep bonus depreciation and keep the Section 179 deduction at $500,000, we're also assuming a 35% tax rate, there's a potential tax savings of $300,000 for the entity. Now, if Congress doesn't go through and extend the bonus or 179, and they keep the limitation for Section 179 at $25,000, and they eliminate bonus completely, there's only a tax savings of $77,000 based on regular depreciation and the $25,000 limit on Section 179. Now, that difference of $223,000 is significant for these manufacturing entities. They could go out and buy more equipment at the end of the year or for next year, and they could hire employees, put their money into inventory. So that tax saving is something that should be planned in advance, but the Congress doesn't allow it based on coming up with these extenders at, you know, the end of December of this current year.
Great.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Why is it that Congress waits till the end of the year so that the manufacturer can
Lou, I heard the beginning of your question, but you're kind of breaking up on my line. But I guess the answer to that is I'm not really quite sure personally. I don't really venture in the political arena. You know, we hear chatter that's going on. But I don't have any specific answer for you of why it's being held or delayed up to this point. I could suspect that they looked at their budgets and so on and so forth, and they made a determination and probably redetermination at the end of the year, realizing that they would upset a lot of business owners if they don't reinstitute these deductions.
Now, there is a bit of a gotcha in this, isn't there, Vince, in that, or Gianluca, in that that equipment has to be plugged in by December 31st. Is that right?
Correct. Well, it has to be placed in service at before 12/31, absolutely, in order to be eligible for the deduction.
Okay. And, Vince, what kind of stuff falls into this, and what kind of stuff doesn't fall into this?
Okay. Well, very simply, the stuff that doesn't fall into it is real property. A building, whether it be commercial or residential. What falls into it are a lot of things, especially for manufacturers. Clearly, manufacturing equipment. I usually like to call them widget makers. Your machinery, you know, the line or whatever it may be. Also, furniture and fixtures in your office, computers, desks. Chairs, or whatever you decide to put into your office, and certain types of leasehold improvements. If you're doing some work in a building and you're reconfiguring the building, certain leaseholds, not to get too technical, but if the leaseholds are qualified leaseholds, then you could take 179 and bonus against that, where generally real property, which is buildings themselves, you cannot take these deductions for. So for a manufacturer, you know, it's more of the nuts and bolts of what they might acquire to put into their plant to build and to make something. That's what I would probably simplify it that way. You know, an observation that I think we talked about yesterday is where, because these rules haven't been reenacted yet, you know, manufacturers have been sitting, some of them have been sitting on the sidelines and waiting for this to happen before they made a capital investment. And, you know, back to your question, Lou, about, you know, why is Congress delaying it? You know, I find it funny that we want to stimulate investment, stimulate large ticket purchases and keep things going in our economy. And this certainly would have been an opportunity for certain manufacturers who had an elective need to buy certain equipment, would have already made some expenditures by now. Clearly, I tell clients that if you need to purchase something, you purchase it. Let the economics make the ultimate decision and not the tax result. But you're asking now, you would reinstate this thing 2.5 weeks before the end of the year, and manufacturers going to have to now run out and do what they can to take advantage of this thing if they needed to buy something. And the likelihood of them getting something and plugging it in by the end of the year is very, very small. So, you know, there's the disadvantage to what's going on here. Or the unfair piece of it, I should say.
Luca, in the world of the Internet of Things, the industrial Internet of Things, big data, connecting machines to the servers and then collecting all of the data, is technology and software included in the 179?
Yes, it is.
I think that's going to be an error. Go ahead, Vince.
No, well, software, anything that has a life of 5 to 7 to 10 years would be considered property eligible for 179 or bonus. And certain software actually could be expensed based upon different election criteria with the IRS. But generally, software is usually considered 3-year life in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
But the computer equipment is generally considered 5 to 7 year. So an entire upgrade of a company's IT system could qualify for a full expense election depending on the amount of money they put in. And we have taken advantage of this in the years where clients have decided to upgrade their computer model, their software programs. We consult with a lot of our clients to look at their new software and see if the package is bringing their business to the next level. And in a lot of cases, we're referring consultants to take a look at this software package to see if it's going to do the job for them down the road. It might be good for them now. You know, some clients might be using QuickBooks, which is a great program, but when you get into the larger revenue targets and more integrated approach with inventory, your program might have to be more sophisticated. So clearly, the planning around this is very unique. You have to let them know that this opportunity exists, and that it helps also them going out there and purchasing their upgrades.
Vince, let's talk about your experience with your manufacturing customer base. Do they know about this?
Well, do they know about it? I would think that most of our clients, or specifically the clients that I work on, understand this and do know about it and understand what the issues are right now, because I do consult my clients on a regular basis. I would tend to think that most accounting firms who have good relationships with their clients would already prompt them to these issues. So I think a lot of manufacturers may know about this. But I also find that a lot of clients do not know certain things, or they don't read. You know, a lot of this information is public. You know, you're not going to find it in the Daily News or the New York Post or any kind of paper of that nature. But, you know, if you read the Journal or any kind of trade magazines, there might be articles on this about it. But I really think it's incumbent upon the tax professional to share this information with their clients and keep them abreast. And it also goes with good planning. You know, it's hard to sit down with a client and them ask you questions without them understanding about these rules, because cash flow is always a big issue for a manufacturer, and this will certainly help cash flow and cut down their cost of funds if they're going to get a larger tax refund because of these deductions, or spend less money in taxes. It's more money in the pocket. They don't have to go to the bank, possibly, for the extra capital, you know. And just let me backtrack about this and put everything in perspective here, because I said in the beginning it was not a credit. It is a deduction. It's an accelerated depreciation deduction. Now, with depreciation, whatever you take now, you kind of give back later. Depreciation, an accelerated deduction today turns around into a lower depreciation number down the road. So, you know, it's a zero-sum gain over a period of time from a tax point of view. The real savings is the time value of money when you really put it to the test. So even if you're getting a $300,000 tax refund today, at some point down the road you will be paying that back in some indirect fashion. So when you factor in your cost of funds, that's really where the net real savings is going to be, in terms of getting some cash today and not having to borrow. So I just wanted to make that clear, that this is just not a one-time thing that you get and never have to give back.
Okay, and is there an impact of the various stimulus acts on Section 179?
Well, again, 179 has been in the code for a number of years. And over a period of a number of years, through 2013, it's been somewhat permanent. But in 2014, it started to change, and they reduced the limits to much lower numbers. And they only extended it temporarily, retroactively to 14 in December of 2014. So in 2014, most of the planning was probably done with a lower limit, unless the accountants felt good about them coming back with this deduction, which some of us did. We felt somewhat optimistic about it, and the R&D credit falls into that too, which is something we could talk about if you'd like. But it's all part of stimulus. Yes, it's all part of getting some cash in and let people be able to reinvest money back into the economy, back in, as Lucas said, payroll, and grow their business. And it's kind of I don't want to use the word sad, but it's unfair that they're doing this at the last minute, and again, it's being done now at the last minute, if it's done at all. We hope, and I just read something today that I heard something today that there's going to be a push to make it permanent, which is where we need it to be. We need to be a permanent item in the code and not something that could go up or down at any point in time. You know, when it's permanent, it's written in the statute, and it's going to be fixed until such other time there might be a change in the law. But right now, it's not being seen as a permanent correction yet, or a permanent deduction.
And one thing I'd like to add is that it's ironic that the bonus depreciation, Section 179, is being advocated by politicians as a method of stimulating the economy through asset acquisitions, but they don't extend or make permanent these deductions until year end and don't allow these investments to take place until there's a tax benefit out of it. And it's just ironic that these politicians are driving asset acquisitions through depreciation, yet they can't come up with a decision on what to do with these deductions.
Good point, Luca.
Yeah, I think it's a little of Washington smoke and mirrors. You know, it plays well in the media, making a few votes, but they don't have to really commit to it. So that's always a challenge dealing with Washington. But you mentioned, Vince, for a moment, the R&D. Why don't we talk about that?
Well, I know it's outside of the scope of this discussion, but I think it deserves a quick 1 minute, only because of our experiences. The R&D credit is a credit available to various types of businesses, not just manufacturers, and in a general sense, a credit against tax. Usually it's measured mostly by wages, but mostly by the costs associated with the company either developing a product, a new product, or improving the line or improving the production of a product. And that's very simplistic, by the way. And we found that R&D is in the tax code right now, but again, it's not permanent. It's been extended for the last 7 or 8 years that I can remember. Every time we go back and forth. But we've been taking advantage of the R&D credit through doing a study of a company's operations and determining whether or not they were eligible for this credit. And this credit could be a very, very large number and a very big benefit to various types of businesses. Manufacturing is really the hot spot because manufacturers themselves either develop or improve a line or improve the method in which they produce a product. And in a lot of cases, the costs that go into that process, the wages mostly, could be eligible for a nice credit. And that credit is a dollar-for-dollar credit off your tax. You know, the credit does have limitations based upon alternative minimum tax issues, and I'm not going to get into all that just now, maybe a discussion for a later date. But I find here that a lot of our clients do not know about this credit. It's out there, but maybe it's not out there the way it should be. And we've been bringing it to light, and it's been really a great opportunity for clients to get some real money back without having to give it back. Unlike depreciation, the credit is your money. It stays in your pocket. So for manufacturers especially, if the manufacturers out there are not thinking about this credit or their accountants are not bringing it to the table, my recommendation would be to mention it to their advisor, or they could reach out to us and ask us a few questions. And usually the determination process is not very long. If there is a determination that a credit may exist, then usually you engage a professional group to do a study and do an analysis, which will be supported under audit, because the IRS does consider this a little bit of a hot spot, because some people like to take advantage of the credit and maybe take too much of it. But clearly, we have clients that benefited on the terms of hundreds of thousands of dollars in these credits, and clients that never thought that a credit may even exist in their business. Just by talking to us, we identified an opportunity. And again, the opportunity is real. It's not that something was invented. It was real, and it is available. It's in the code, you know. And so, you know, just something that the listening group should keep in mind, because to me, 179 bonus, depreciation, R&D, all these things go hand in hand in really advising a client and looking at value-added opportunities that a client could take advantage of to get some real money back in their pocket at you know, minimal costs.
I'd like to just interject for a moment. You've got an incredible amount of information and that would be valuable to our listeners. And I just want to – we're coming up near the end of the segment shortly, and I'd like to make sure that you give your website address and an email if, in fact, you choose to give us an email. So why don't you give that to us for our listeners?
Okay, so I'm Vince Pellucci. My email address is as follows, Vincent, V-I-N-C-E-N-T, dot, last name Pellucci, P as in Peter, A-O-L-U-C-C-I, at Weiser, W-E-I-S-E-R, Mazars, M-A-Z-A-R-S.com. Very long, but hopefully everybody got it down. If you don't know, if you didn't get it, you could go onto our website, wisemazars.com. I'm listed there as one of the partners, and my contact information is there as well.
Now, Vince, you also put out some newsletters through the firm, do you not? How do listeners get those newsletters?
Well, that's a great question. We do. We put out a quarterly M&D newsletter in all our different segments. If any of the listening group would like to be on that email blast, send me an email with your information. I'll bring it into my marketing department, and you'll go on the list. And you could get our newsletters quarterly. And then any other type of information that comes out. We do email blasts on once this, if this extender is passed, this will be an email blast. So a lot of information comes out of the firm on thought leadership in a lot of areas, and we'll be glad to put you on our list for information.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. I would like to have you probably add us onto that, Vince, because we would like to see that information as well. A lot of great information coming out from the firm, and something that we try to do here on Manufacturing Talk Radio is to look over information that's coming out of some of the guests that we've had on the show, particularly those who are exceptionally knowledgeable, like Vince and Luca have demonstrated that they are today, and to share that information on an ongoing basis. So this isn't just a one-off discussion. We will probably invite them back on the show sometime next year to kind of update us on what's happening, both with 179. We might want to do some discussion on the R&D piece of it because there are some nuances, but it's a great opportunity for businesses. So I just want to thank, Vince, you for being on our show today, and Luca as well.
Well, thank you for having us, gentlemen. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
To your listening group.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a brief commercial break here, and then we're going to be back with Brad Holcomb, who is the chair of the Institute of Supply Management's report on business for the manufacturing sector, which just came out this morning. Brad is a little crunched for time on the first because he's on over a dozen programs. So let's take a commercial break, and we'll come right back with Brad Holcomb.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
How do you keep your business humming? Where do you go when you're looking for quality suppliers of new equipment? Components, MRO supplies, repair services, or even raw materials. 30 years ago, you would have turned to the Thomas Register. Today, those big green books are better than ever at thomasnet.com, industry's leading platform for product sourcing and supplier discovery. You can easily find that local machine shop, national distributor, OEM, or any supplier having the right quality certification. Fast and free. You can even get to specific products, components, or downloadable 3D CAD drawings simply by entering specifications or part numbers. There's a reason ThomasNet.com has become the go-to supplier discovery tool for procurement professionals and engineers. There's simply no other resource like it, and it's all free. Go to ThomasNet.com today and see how top-notch supplier discovery doesn't have to put a dent into your bottom line.
All Metals and Forge Group is an ISO 9001 AS and EN 9100 manufacturer of open die forgings and seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, copper, titanium, and nickel alloys. Visit us at steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit AmericanCrane.com. That's AmericanCrane.com or 877-877-6778.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio. In this segment, we're going to be speaking with Mr. Brad Holcomb, who is the committee chair of the ISM's Manufacturing Report on Business, which just came out at 10 a.m. this morning, Eastern Time, and we're always excited to have Brad on the show. Brad, welcome back.
Thank you very much. I'm always excited to be here.
Well, we appreciate
you. Thank you, Brad. Sorry, over talked to you. How are you doing, Brad? Lou.
I'm doing great. Thank you. Great. Appreciate it.
We are always excited to have you on the show because you go into great depth in this report, and it's more than just a number, as we've talked about in the past. So I'd like to have you kind of walk through the first section of the report, and if anybody's interested in getting this, it's instituteforsupplymanagement.com. You can find the report on their website. Sorry, .org. And you can find it on their website. Brad, go ahead.
Yes, yes. And this is a particularly good month to look more deeply beyond the headline number of the PMI at 48.6, because there's a lot behind all of these numbers each month, and this month is no exception. So from an overall perspective, the PMI registered 48.6. It dropped down into contraction territory for the first time in 3 years, exactly 3 years. That was November 2012, when we had the only other dip below 50 since the recovery started in the 2009 timeframe. And only 5 of 18 industries reported growth, while 10 reported contraction in the PMI. So definitely a little bit of a chilly month in November, both literally and figuratively. And it was led by a decline in new orders, also the first time it's declined since November of 2012. Down 4 percentage points to 48.9. And then the next sub-index is production, off 3.7 percentage points, following new orders, if you will, to 49.2. That's the first contraction in production since August of 2012. And note, I've referred several times to 2012, which is remarkably like the year we're having in 2015. Let me keep going down our list. The next two sub-indexes are employment and supplier deliveries, and then I'll get to inventories. On the employment side, good news. Above 50 from last month's contraction, up 3.7 percentage points to 51.3. This is a bright spot in this particular report because our companies would not add to employment ranks unless they saw a good flow of orders on into the short and medium term. Supplier deliveries slowing just slightly, slowing a little faster than last month. That's kind of neither here nor there. It's so close to 50. But I do want to comment on the next and fifth sub-index of the PMI, and that is inventories of raw materials. At 43, that's the same as it was in the lowest since December of 2012, once again 2012. And inventories at 43, down 3.5 percentage points from last month, is a pretty low number, and it is dragging the PMI down more so than either new orders or production, which are actually quite close to 50. So inventories of raw materials is sort of the culprit this month, and it's just, sort of a fact of where inventories are at this point, I think partially driven by a desire and a plan to reduce inventories going into the year end so that when you close the books, you're not sitting on too much inventory. So there's sort of an overview of the component parts of the PMI. Down 1.5 percentage points from last month, dipping below 50 for the first time since November 2012.
Well, Brett, I think you're right on inventories. They're trying to shave them off before they close the year end. Is that typical? Have you seen that in prior years?
Yeah, it is pretty typical. I went back and kind of re-scanned over the years, and it's very typical. And this is, so once again, we have five sub-indexes. All five, up until a couple of years ago, were seasonalized so that one month would look like any other month. However, a couple of years ago, through our statistical analysis, inventories is no longer seasonalized. So it will kind of, you know, flow according to, you know, seasonal characteristics, and year end would be one of those milestones where we'll see it come down.
Okay. Well, that certainly makes sense. It's going to have probably then a bit more volatility in it than the other the sub indexes.
Yeah.
What about the other five things? I know that you track customer inventories, inventories, prices, etc. Give us kind of a walkthrough on what's happening there as well, with any insight that you could offer us listeners.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things here, and let's start with customer inventories. 50.5, it's, you know, very close to what it was last month at 51, registering too high, but just sort of slightly too high in the view of our manufacturers. And so there's a little bit of a propensity to hold back on new orders as a result of slightly too high customer inventories. Now, getting into something that's much more interesting to me is prices of raw materials. At 35.5, it's down again 3.5 percentage points, decreasing for the 13th consecutive month. This is certainly unprecedented under my watch, and as we talk each month, it's largely attributed to the new price of oil and related commodities. And so has been to this point this year a positive thing for most of our industries, because it translates into a lower cost of manufacturing, and it opens up the opportunity to save some of those prices, not pass them on at least fully to end users or customers, open up margins, enhance profitability, which is good to keep our companies healthy, if you will. So in the let's just call 13 months the short term. In the short term, lower raw material prices favors most of manufacturing. In the longer term, probably not. It would be more of a reflection of softer overall global demand if prices continued to be deflationary, which is a term that we kind of like to stay away from or not talk about, but it's happening in raw materials.
And primary metals, I noticed that's picked up a bit. They're one of the five that did grow.
Primary metals?
Yeah. Am I not seeing that correctly?
Yes, that's correct. Primary metals. New orders.
If you can't forget the sponsor of the show now.
I know. God forbid. But let's keep going down the list here. But I want to stick with prices for a second.
Okay.
We are going to be releasing on December 8th a forecast, as we always do at that time of year, for the year ahead. So on December 8th, we'll have a forecast from this same panel to tell us what they think about next year. And within that report, which is pretty extensive, We've asked two special questions of our panel. One about the impact of continuing low oil prices, whether it's positive, negative, negligible, or don't know. And we've asked the second similar question about the price of the dollar. And so we'll get some deep insights into those two issues in terms of how it's impacted manufacturing broadly in 2015. So stay tuned for the December 8 release.
That's certainly an excellent report. We look forward to it. Brad, I've noticed something that's kind of cropping up in the last three reports, and that's commodities up in price. And I think if I recall the previous two reports, again, it was listed as none.
Well, it's been a very short list recently, and this month it's none up in price. And on the other hand, commodities down in price, we've got a number of that are continuing for several months in a row. And that pretty much includes all the metals complex, which takes a lot of energy, a lot of oil, if you will, to produce, hence the downdraft here.
Okay.
But what you won't see that came up earlier in another discussion this morning is that we don't see the direct oil-related products here like plastics and resins, which have been coming down, of course, but the fact that they're not continuing on the commodities down in price list may suggest a bottoming out of those particular commodities.
Brad, are any of your respondents particularly alarmed by this report? Did you see anything in there that was, wrist-slitting time? I don't think that that's the case.
No, it's not. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because if you look at our comments, and I try to select comments from the hundreds that I get that are representative of the sense and the flow of manufacturing on the whole, there are some that are continuing comments about the low price of oil, and in this particular case, the comment basically says, hey, we've got to get used to this as a new reality in terms of their expectations. That comes directly from the petroleum and coal products industry. We see comments about the downturn in China, which is, again, true as viewed through their PMI down again, and the strong dollar. So those are continuing comments, but pretty much more the same, if you will. On the other hand, we see fabricated metal products comment saying automotive remains strong, which we know. Transportation more broadly, including airplanes, business is still good. Miscellaneous manufacturing comment, medical devices continue to be strong. No surprise there because of the flourishing healthcare industry. And then some that are just sort of a little muted. Incoming orders have leveled off from the summer, furniture and related. And food, beverage, and tobacco month-over-month conditions are stable. So there's nothing here that nobody is saying, hey, I'm worried, the sky is falling, et cetera. Not at all. Which leads me to want to comment more on business cycles and manufacturing cycles in particular, and go back to 2012, which I've alluded to a couple of times. I'm looking at my chart, and I'm looking at the patterns post-recession. That is, we started to come out of the recession in 2009, and we had pretty good years in 2009, 2010, and 11. Now, in 2012, the result through November, average PMI of about 51.6, 51.7, is exactly the same as the average PMI for this year through November. And also, what's extremely similar is that in both Novembers, 2012, 2015, the PMI dipped below 50. And then in 2012, it jumped back to 50 even. And then the following year, the average PMI was 53.8. And the year after that, 2014, was 55.7. So here we sit in November 2015 at roughly the same point as we were in November 2012. And there's no reason to believe that it won't be up from here. And if my experience at the mall yesterday was anything like yours or those in your audience, I think people are spending in December.
Well, I think that's right, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because as we drive around, just noticing what's happening at even strip malls, shopping malls, there seems to be a fair amount of activity. Restaurants seem to be doing well. People seem to be out spending money. I don't hear any sense of gloom and doom. Occasionally the media burps up something about a recession, but it fades quickly. So I think this report is indicative of maybe a seasonal downturn that will pop back up in January.
As they have always said in the past, primary election years is always economically good for the country. Let us, in spite of the fact that this is the most bizarre election cycle, to say it mildly.
Are you running, by the way?
Not yet. I'm waiting to jump in.
We're both thinking about it.
when Donnie looks to get out, I'll jump in.
Okay.
We could wear our yellow jackets. Mm-hmm. That's a real brand catcher. But what's your thought on that as far as election year cycles and the economy?
You know,
I'm not
asking for
a forecast.
Right. Which I don't do. But
I know.
You know, and I'm not really conversant as economists would be about, you know, these types of cycles and impacts. So I just don't know is really the right answer for that. But it is certainly an interesting, political situation right now with so many candidates and That along with geopolitical, situations elsewhere, China continuing to struggle a bit with their economy, et cetera. So we continue to be in an environment of more uncertainty than we've had, a few years ago. And I'm really not sure that that's going to change very much in the short term. The degree of uncertainty, which drives attitudes and spending behavior and new orders and such.
Brad, let's talk about December 8th, the report, and I realize you can't go into the detail of the report, but can you just touch on for our listening audience what will be in that report when it comes out?
Yeah. That's a very different report than we do monthly. As your audience knows, the questions in each one of the dimensions is sort of like, are things good or better, same or worse than last month? So it's very much related to the prior month. We're looking for direction, and then we're looking for trends. In the latter part of the year, we do a forecast, which has a completely different set of questions. And some of those different questions relate to increase in revenues, their estimation of the increase in revenues of their companies. And then we do that collectively. Also, the improvement in profit margins is something that we ask and predict. And so there are some new things, and I mentioned the two special questions, which we like to make relevant to the times that we're in. So we've asked about the price of oil and the price of the dollar as special questions. And this report is quite comprehensive. It covers both manufacturing and non-manufacturing. So we're covering the entire GDP of the country in terms of our forecast between Tony Nieves and myself.
Brad, anything? Now, how many different shows have you been on so far today? Who have you been with?
Oh my gosh, I've got three pages worth, and I'm on page two. So I've had about 15 calls. I have a couple of radio shows left this afternoon, as well as some magazine outlets. So it's a lot. People are very interested in this. Most of them are my usual calls. And yet this is the most interesting because I have more time to go into more depth.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there anything that you haven't been asked on one of those shows today or that you were asked that you thought you'd like to share with our audience that's particularly important?
You know, in the few minutes that I have with the mainstream media, if you will, their focus tends to be on the headline number. And we start with that and go as far as we can in the time allowed. What we didn't really get to is what I talked more about in terms of raw materials prices being down and the implications of that. We didn't talk much at all about imports and exports, which are kind of holding, their own in view of all things. Exports has been down for 6 months in a row, really no surprise, no change there. That's related to the price of the dollar and to some extent the situation in China where they're still struggling a bit with their economy. And then imports, that's up nicely 2 percentage points, still contracting, but very close to 50.
Anything in your respondents' comments that triggered why imports jumped up 2 points?
Only indirectly. The deflation in raw materials prices, that's particularly, true in terms of our imported raw materials. The high prices of the dollar, while we all know and hear most about that it affects our finished goods products overseas, in other words, our exports, in a negative way, it impacts imports in a positive way because the price of those raw materials are less with our dollar being high. And in balance, you'll all hear on December 8th, what we think that all means for the year that we're about to close.
Okay.
But we do, let me just say that we import a lot more raw materials than we export finished goods.
And finally, Brad, capital expenditures. I know we all kind of either hoped or expected them to be strong this year. And as you've proceeded through the year month by month, based on your last year's December report and your May update, did capital expenditures come in anywhere close to what you expected?
Well, again, I can't comment specifically on what we're going to release on December 8th, but, in terms of an industry that specifically aligns with that, we're talking about machinery, right? That's one of our 18 different sectors. And machinery, hasn't been doing particularly well, and this month it's on the declining list. And so there's some early indication of where that stands. On December 8th, we'll talk about where we are going to end up this year and what we project for next year as well. But that tends to be a very, very fluid, dynamic number and forecast, even for not just for us, but for companies specifically, each and every one of them. In my experience in 35 years in manufacturing, the CFOs will agree to one number going into a budget, but they'll hold on to the purse strings until they actually see that the year is developing as predicted. If it's starting to go better, then they'll open it up and we'll end up spending more put in more equipment and plant as well as technology.
Right, right. Yeah, I think a lot of what we've seen are investments in technology because the ROI is very quick on it and not so much in the plants and machinery.
Yeah, yeah. And that's actually another thing that we'll address specifically in our December 8th report is in terms of production capacity and efficiencies, you know, what are the four most important factors in driving that efficiency? In other words, what levers did you pull? Was it more employment, more hours for current employment, technology, machinery, et cetera? So that will be carved out and dealt with in some detail.
Well, after you get through with the chaos of today, Brad, we'll reach back to you and talk to you about either December 8th or December 15th. We'd love to have you back on the show to talk about that report. We've had you on in prior years. It's excellent information. Certainly anyone who wants to get a sense of what next year is going to look like should go to the ISM and pull down that report. And Brad, we appreciate you having been on the show again today, and I know you're off to your next interview, so thank you for taking the time with us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much. Take care.
Brad, and you tell the mainstream people hello for us.
And goodbye.
Right. And goodbye.
Okay. Goodbye. Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Brad.
Happy holidays. Bye.
The same to you.
Well, that's interesting information. I guess, Lou, the part that I find the most interesting about it is that no one is at the alarmist stage at this point, given that the number has dropped below 50.
So does that mean I can come in off the ledge?
Yeah, I think you can come in and take a breath. We'll bank on the fact that this is an echo of 2012, and 2016 will be an echo of 2013 going back up.
Well, the good news, we've been hearing bits and pieces about GDP projections for 2016 and 17. I'm not sure if they're, you know, what they're smoking, but it certainly seems to be on an upward trend. So along with what Brad is telling us and others, I guess we'll just have to have patience and wait for the up thumbs.
Yes, and it will certainly be interesting to see what's in that December 8 report that the ISM is coming out with. And for our listeners, we'll see if we can get Brad back on the show to talk about that either on December 8 or on December 15th. And that'll give you an opportunity to tune in and find out what's going on in 2015. Other than that, I think that wraps us up, Lou, unless you've got a final comment you want to slide in.
Yeah, I just want to mention for those who tuned into the show late that right after the show you'll be able to go to mfgtalkradio.com and the show will be streaming and you'll be able to listen to it from in its entirety. We look forward to seeing you all or hearing you all next week. And Tim, you have a good week.
Thanks, you too, Lou. Feel free to grab MFG Talk Radio on your iPhone, iPad, Android, laptop, however you get it. You can get it all those ways simply by going to mfgtalkradio.com, and that wraps us up for today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.